About this. Now, here we go. Well, what a treat this is. I've just looked up at the screen and I've got one of the people in this world over the years I've had the most incredible respect for. You know why? Because if you can cast your mind back to March 2006, if I remember rightly, we had coming in towards Innisfail, the most terrifying thing, and this was Cyclone Larry, of course, it was the most bizarre situation because it was coming in, as they said back then, like an arrow. Now, I got called in the studio at night. It was coming in quickly. It looked like, according to the Bureau, it was going to hit sometime between 6:30 and 7. And I remember putting a call through to the Prime Minister, John Howard, and saying, look, we've got an issue here. We've got a cyclone coming in. It's going to be a shocker. Mr. Prime Minister, is there any way I can talk to you first thing in the morning after it's in fact hit and it's looking like Innisfail? Because we'll be getting early reports through and I'm sure the support of the Prime Minister would go a long way to helping people endure what's headed their way. He said, John, if you're saying 6:30 till 7, I'll be on the phone at 7 o'clock. Be ready for the call. And he was on the phone next morning at 7 o'clock. He was a wonderful Prime Minister. But the reason I'm talking now is I've got another gentleman who was instrumental in the recovery. Not instrumental, he led it. He led it. And I'm going to get a chance now to talk to him because he's coming up for an issue. I've got to talk to you about this a little bit later on. There's a very special legacy dinner coming up. It's at the Pullman, but I'll give you those details in a few minutes' time. Of course, Peter Cosgrove, we'll call him. That is a lot of formal titles these days. He, of course, was in Vietnam, very highly honoured in Vietnam. In 1999, he served as commander of the International Force for East Timor, the peacekeeping mission, etc., East Timor. He then became Australia's Chief of Army, 2000 to 2002, Chief of the Defence Force, 2002 to 2005. Won't go on with more. He's not a stickler for formalities, but he's on the line. Peter Cosgrove, good morning and welcome back.
Oh, g'day, John. It's great to be talking to you. Tomorrow, of course, I'm going to be in Canberra for that 50th anniversary of the closing moments of our time in Vietnam. But I'm so full of nostalgia for you, your listeners, and the whole way of life up there in the far north. I wish I was there, but there you go.
I've got to say, I do remember, it might have been the first time we spoke, I know you were on the program every few days giving us updates on the recovery and your leadership of the recovery and what you were able to report, but I do remember you had a very sharp and quick sense of humour. I don't know if you're allowed to have a sense of humour anymore because of your position formerly as Governor-General, but let me try and to remind you, I remember saying to you, I'm introducing a bloke down in Innisfail, and he's as busy as a one-armed bricklayer in Beirut. And I thought that'd be the end of it. You'd have a little bit of a titter and move on. But you continued with the joke.
Yep. Yep. Well, my dad used to have the one-armed example, but he would call it a one-armed paper hanger in a gale with a dose of the hives and his braces broken. So, you know, you got the message.
But it was at a time when we needed a bit of a laugh. My God, it was a catastrophic cyclone and people were distraught. This was obviously a couple of weeks after it hit, but we just needed a bit of a giggle and you provided it for us. Can I just ask you to the appointment? Did it come from Peter Beattie, the then Premier, or from John Howard, the Prime Minister?
Well, it came from Peter Beattie, but he and Prime Minister Howard had been up that very day to Innisfail straight after the cyclone, and they together toured the town. And to the great credit of both governments, there were already people from the public service who were up there, you know, with bags of money, basically, because all the ATMs, everything went out. So all the expectations of a modern information age society, ATMs, all that sort of thing, nothing worked. So cash was king. So they had people doing that, but they basically carried away the notion that this was a really big disaster and that they needed somebody on the ground. And Canberra was too far away, of course, and even Brisbane was too far away. You couldn't do it from those areas. So they came to the conclusion that they would like somebody to be on deck, so to speak. And somewhere in that conversation, my name came up. And look, Wayne Goss, who I remember very fondly.
Oh, he's wonderful.
The late Wayne Goss.
Yes.
Well, they got in touch with him because by then I was retired and they wanted to be able to approach me directly. So I think it was Wayne Goss and Peter Beattie had a conversation and Wayne gave them my present phone number. Mm. And then he rang me. This is Wayne.
Yeah.
And I was sitting at home. I haven't been away from the TV screen all day watching all the unfolding vision of the carnage, the disaster up in the far north. And so I remember turning to my lovely wife and saying, you know, they're going to have to get somebody on the ground up there to help you. And then the phone rang. And it was when Beattie rang up, I said, yes, of course, you know, I'm at your disposal. It would be my honour to help. So that was it. And then I came up with Peter Beattie a couple of days later, and we I stayed up there, basically. And I have to tell you, a lot of experiences come your way when you're in the military because you've got such a varied life. But boy, oh boy, it was a privilege to be up there. Mm. Not only did I make a lot of friends, but I saw great Aussie perseverance and courage and just stoicism in the face of enormous damage. And, you know, one of the things that really, really impressed me, you go to see, characteristically, an older Australian, maybe a lady who's living now, she might be a widow, she's in her home, it's been smashed, the roof's gone, and you'll go in and you'll be commiserating and you're looking around at the wreckage of her, you know, domestic circumstances, photos everywhere, clothes gone. And she'll say, oh, don't worry about me, darling. The lady down the street, she really copped it. And you think, how Australian is that?
Yeah,
but they, even at that stage, instead of saying, oh, I'm the one in trouble, they'll be thinking about their neighbours and friends, who they will say, oh, they're really in trouble.
Do you know, back then I was wondering, and I still wonder sometimes how you coped, because it must have been so daunting. You hadn't had experience with the approach of and devastation caused by a cyclone, etc. But you'd had that emergency back in East Timor, and I wondered if indeed having to endure that sort of pressure may have assisted in you thinking, this is where we've got to go, this is my challenge, this is how I'm going to achieve it.
Well, I'll tell you one of the things which came out of a very long period in uniform, and that is that most disasters, whatever they are, they revolve around not things, but people. Obviously, things get smashed in a natural disaster. For example, the power went out and no clean drinking water was available. The roads were blocked, all that sort of thing. So the people of the far north in the disaster area were reduced to village life before there was electricity. So they were suddenly disorientated and thrown asunder by this change to their lives. Mm. So the first thing you've got to do is actually minister to people and make sure that they get all the information you've got, that you're improving their access to the things that make our lives work, like open roads, telephones, radio and television broadcasts, all those sorts of things. People found an absence of information as debilitating as actually not having enough food or no electric light. It was the sort of paralysis of their normal lives which needed to be relieved. So we got a couple of the energy companies who were out and about doing fantastic work. They became the early champions of recovery, because you're able to say that the restoration of power, town by town, village by village, suburb by suburb, that was the drumbeat of recovery.
Yeah.
And of course, lots of things had to happen, but that was one of the optimistic signals to the community every day. Now, the other thing too, you need and this is where radio became so enormously important, because even though people may not have had transistor radios and all that sort of thing, sooner or later they could get back on the air, so to speak, and the radio kept giving them the information about recovery and what things they needed to do. So I believe that it was a people problem. I mean, if a cyclone had hit some uninhabited part of Cape York Peninsula and smashed down you know, hundreds of square kilometres of rainforest.
Mm.
We'd fly a helicopter over it and take some pictures, and it'd be on the evening news for 30 seconds, and we'd all carry on. But because of these natural disasters affect people, you minister to people in all respects. So even getting the kids back to school, that became a hugely important thing for the mental well-being of families because the kids were back in a routine, allowing mum and dad to do hugely necessary work to do with re-establishing the home and the business.
Mm. Do you know, you just brought back so many memories. I do remember the challenges you had. You talked about the blackouts, the energy issue, etc. Tradies, yep. Tradies were hen's teeth. I couldn't believe how hard it was to get the simplest work done around the house. There was a queue up for started at Mount Isa with people desperate for a tradie. But also there were simple things like access to food. I do remember that Peter Beattie, once again, very accessible to the talk show, but getting people up to hand out the urgently needed supplies, they could have been public servants, they could have been from charities or whatever, but they became very much available. We had volunteers with little utes and things, very tiny little transport vehicles heading down to take supplies that were dropped off at little collection points around Cairns, fundamentally desperately needed food and supplies. It was all in, wasn't it? That was the wonderful thing about our community up here. We were all in it. We were all going to help out, and it really added a lot to helping out in your campaign.
Well, I felt that Australia showed its best foot forward at such times. Now, look, the sort of muscular compassion that is inherent in the Australian character came out in spades. I loved to see it. Every now and then there was a rat bag who'd try to sell overpriced generators, and they were sent away with a flea in their ear. Very little poor behaviour. Most of the behaviour, most of the default energy and reaction from our fellow Australians was to dig deep and to help. And we had church groups from Cairns going down to Babinda.
Yeah.
Now, I was travelling through Babinda. That was where the eye of the cyclone passed over. So it copped the fiercest winds.
Yeah.
And Babinda was in terrible shape.
Mm.
So I was there with a couple of colleagues, and we saw a street, one of the streets of Babinda, absolutely chockers with vehicles which obviously were from somewhere else.
Mm.
And people swarming around the base of homes that had been smashed. And they were all busy working, and they were piling rubbish out onto the roadside to be collected later. So I stopped and asked. I said, well, this is obviously more than just the population of that street.
Mm.
And I found out that they were from a particular church group in Cairns. So I won't say which one, but a church group. And they got together and said, well, what are we going to do? We're going to jump in vehicles, and we're going to go down. We're going to be a labour force. So they turned up in a convoy of 20 or something vehicles, chose any old street in Babinda. Nothing to do with their co-religionists. There wasn't any of that sort of judgment made. They found a street that looked like it was in a hell of a mess, and they started to work with the homeowners and just started moving stuff out. And I was so impressed by that. I stopped and spoke to them, of course.
Yeah.
And I said, how do you pick this out? Are these from the same denomination as your church? They said, oh, no, we've got no idea about that. This is just what we're doing.
Yes.
So I thought, go Aussie. That was fantastic.
You just added a wonderful new term to my vocabulary. Used the term Australia's muscular compassion. That says it all.
Yeah, I hope so.
Oh,
yeah.
What a term. That's terrific. Don't go away. I don't know how he knew you were coming. Of course, tomorrow we've got to Veterans Day, Vietnam Veterans Day, and I've got a regular listener called Dizzy and a regular contributor. He said, I think you're going to be talking to Peter Cosgrove. This is a couple of days ago. Oh, maybe, yeah, why? He said, because can you ask him to mention the Battle of Coral Balmoral? He was there, and he said, we don't get much of a mention. You know, the focus is always on Long Tan, so I'm just passing on Dizzy's message to you, Peter Cosgrove.
Well, tomorrow I will be at the Australian War Memorial. I'll be down on Anzac Avenue at the Vietnam Memorial, which is itself a separate structure there, beautiful and very poignant tribute to our men and women who were in Vietnam. 50 years since Gough Whitlam asked the Governor-General, who made the announcement on the 11th of January 1973, that henceforth, there'd be no further combat operations by Australians in Vietnam.
Mm.
This was effectively the start of our withdrawal from that country. Now, long Tanday. And why? Well, you had to have a day. You've got Anzac Day for everything else. For the Vietnam folks, we had to select years ago a battle which became emblematic of the war. So Long Tan, 18th of August, it was conducted and finished in a day. But there were so many big battles in Vietnam. And Dizzy's recollection of Coral Balmoral, those two adjacent battles, Coral being the one he was involved with, 12th of May 1968, that was a huge battle involving major elements, most of the 1st Battalion of the Royal Australian Regiment. Dizzy, if you're listening, I had a chance to command that battalion a number of years later, so I love the that mob. But that battle, the 12th of May 1968, was a knockdown, drag-out affair, and Australians had to fight ferociously for their own survival there. Now, Dizzy, I'm sorry to tell you, and any other veterans from that period, that I attended yesterday the funeral of your great commanding officer, who was, in the end, General the Honourable Sir Philip Bennett, previous Governor of Tasmania. But back in the day, he was Lieutenant Colonel Phil Bennett, CO1RAR, at the Battle of Coral. A very, very fine combat commander in charge of a magnificent fighting battalion. So, Dizzy, hats off to you tomorrow.
Now, don't go away, because I understand you're coming to town. It says here, Saturday, 2nd September, 6 p.m. to Lake Pullman, Cairns International Hotel. And this is all about the Legacy House Project. Tell me you'll be, I presume, sharing a few of those experiences.
I'll be there to first, this is my priority. I want to reconnect with the people of the Far North, especially the wonderful folk who believe in Legacy, help Legacy, and are there on the night to support Legacy. So it'll be my honour to be there, and I'm pretty sure my wife's coming with me on that one. And for us to get back up into that neck of the woods will be absolutely a pleasant experience. We've been up many times over the years, but not as frequently in the last several years since I retired as Governor-General as I might wish. Yeah. So this is going to be a happy return, and I hope I can help to salute Legacy and encourage ongoing support for it.
Well, Peter, I've got to say this has been thoroughly enjoyable catching up on air today. Look forward to that event, 2nd of September. Thank you.
Thanks, John. It's wonderful to talk to you again. And will you be around on the night?
Yes, I will be there, yeah. Just.
Okay, well, I'll look forward to having a cold beer with you and we can exchange live.
Oh, excellent. I've got to shoot through early next morning, but that'll be great to catch up. Peter, this has been magnificent today. Thank you.
All the best to you, mate. See you soon.
What a wonderful bloke. Now, that's Saturday, 2nd of September, 6 p.m. to Lake Pullman, Cairns International Hotel, for the Legacy House Project. Now, tickets can be purchased online through Try Booking. Try Booking. Just search for FNQ Legacy Gala.